Ladies and gentlemen, we have a correction. Jake, I mean, I got it wrong. Who was the Michigan State coach when we played him in the Alamo Bowl?
John L. Smith.
Does he not look like him though?
Mark kind Antonio. Of? Yeah, somewhat. I just want to make sure you don't continue to have this hate for Mark Antonio, that poor man out there.
So someone pointed it, texted on the text line. Hey, yeah, I've always said if I'm wrong, feel free to correct me. Hey, nobody bats 1,000 except Bud Crawford. So they're like, no, he didn't get there until 06. John L. Smith was the head coach of Michigan State, which they're correct. But they kind of look a little bit alike, don't you think?
Yeah, they do look good.
Basically, I saw like the guy that reminded me of Michigan State and I went black. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, screw this guy, man. All right. My apologies. Thank you for correcting me. All right. We've got, would you say, three clips left?
Three
or
clips,
four?
Yeah.
All right, surprise me. Play one.
All right, let's start with Matt Rhule.
Again, I'm so sorry, but you guys know I'm not going to talk about any player's future. Like, I'm just not.
Oh, pause. Pause. So it's been a while since I said. So half the time, they, like, sit in our text messages for, like, 4 days, and as soon as they start to play, I remember what they are. Asked about Dylan Raiola's future and not commenting on players' future. So go ahead. You probably heard this, but play it real quick.
That's their job, right? That's each player's job. If they're, you know, they have to announce their own things because I would never want them to speak. I talked to the whole team about Donnie and certainly to Dylan. I mean, that's his uncle. He loves him, right? So I certainly talked to him, but I talked to all the O-linemen. I talked to all the guys. I mean, Donnie was loved by a lot of guys. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't like firing people. I don't like affecting their families. I don't like moving on from people. But I do have to do what I think is right for the program. And so I certainly talked to Dylan, and I certainly talked to all the O-linemen. I talked to talked to the team. In terms of people's futures, I think that's up to each person, right? Like Emmett came and saw me and told me, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And I told him how proud I was of him. But like, that's his announcement to make, not mine. So
correct me if I'm wrong. Has he not hinted at other players' future in the past in press conferences, or at least like a couple of guys like kind of spoke on their future a little bit and what plans may or may not be?
I mean,
the answer is yes.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was interesting. The other thing was two other things. I'm just going to go with one other thing. I got to do what's best for the program. You ever notice how we'll say things on this show and then similar things are said at the podium? It's usually by Rhule. You think he listens, takes notes right before he does his podcast every week? Like, this is how it's now.
I think he does take notes. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, his podcast just came out today. I started to listen to it. My former teammate, Daniel Black Bullocks, is going to be on. I haven't heard that part yet, but they believe they fixed the college football playoff.
Hey,
Rhule and his other co-host, whose name escapes me at this moment in time, but I don't watch it every week. I'm not on top of it every week, but when you say you fixed the college football playoff, you've got my attention. So I'm part of the way into that. Basically, he's a fan of the play-in games is what I've surmised so far, and then I, you know, had to come to work in here. So I'll finish the rest later. You know, it's interesting with Dylan, which was the other reason I wanted to talk about that. So there were two things. I've heard so many contrasting things. So that's why I don't talk about it a lot, because I don't know what to believe. If sometimes I'm like, if you just connect dots, it's obvious. Well, Dayton's decommitted. Donovan's fired. Okay, Dylan's probably gone. And then you have people who come out and they're like, no, Rhule and Raiola have never been more on the same page. And then you got people who are like, no, there's potential conversations and shopping around going on, just like last year in the offseason. And then you know, there's a big market for him. Then you have some people say, well, he's not getting exactly what he thought he would get, and he's not going to get a better situation than here. So it's all over the map. So what is your opinion and speculation? Because I want to be clear before we get to these other two clips in the end of this segment. What is your opinion and speculation so far in the Dylan Raiola situation?
Well, like you said, if you read the tea leaves, look at the other Raiola's leaf, and I mean, that can lead you one direction. But as I understand it, again, as Matt Rhule has said, you know, he's been around the team, all that sort of stuff. I think that he's doing what every player probably should. I shouldn't say every player, but just about every player is going to probably be interested to see if there's a bigger deal or a better situation out there. That's not, you know, this isn't college football of 10 years ago, unfortunately. I mean, that's kind of a new reality. So I think he, among everybody else, or the majority of everybody else, is probably fielding a phone call or two or making a phone call or two to see what his options are. And again, I would encourage every athlete probably to do that at this point, you know, how the structure's been set up.
All right. Let's go on. We got a Dan Lanning clip. We got a James. We got a bunch of clips as I scroll back through our text. Now, this is like last Friday. It's like a week ago. So instead of playing the James Franklin clip, it's his introductory press conference at Virginia Tech, which I found entertaining. Like, before a reporter would ask him a question, he would vehemently go, "Hi, how are you?" He'd say, "Hi, John, how are you?" He'd make them answer the question of "How are you?" Because one reporter would try to ask the question. He'd be like, "Hi, John, how are you?" He would just keep asking. Like, he was asserting power immediately. Like, "I'm setting this tone with you people. You're going to talk about us, but you better recognize who's in charge." That's what was happening. But he also talked about you have to be able, and I thought it was interesting, being a Nebraska guy, you have to be able to coach what you have, not try to fit what you have to what you want to do as a coach. And I thought that was very interesting. That was basically the diatribe of the clip that we would have played of him. Dan Lanning, and we can play the clip, but I'll just tell you what it said. He did an interview about a week ago, and he said he was the GA that would do all the jobs nobody else wanted. He's like, "How do I stand out? All right, I'll be the one to go get donut, you know, the big man, the coach's donut and coffee in the morning. I'll be the one to clean up the trash that everybody leaves in the meeting rooms, because, you know, sometimes players are messy and coaches." And he's like, "I'll do all the dirty jobs," and that helped him stand out. And then he was the one who would – then coaches would be like, "All right, you want to ask me some questions, I'll actually take the time to talk to you." Because a lot of people want to talk to him, but if you don't stand out to them, they're not going to let you just sit there and pick their brain when they're trying to work. And then he would learn a lot of football. And then he started to climb up the ladder. And then the coaches started to recognize him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's getting hired as a position coach. Then he's at Bama. Now he's at Oregon. And he said it started from doing the jobs that nobody else wanted to do, the ones that people overlooked, the ones that people looked down on. Because we have so many clips, I just gave you a paraphrasation of that. But I want to get to the Texas Tech, because I thought this was interesting. Texas Tech just won the Big 12 and is sitting number 4. In the college football playoff. Here's their billionaire investor walking you through the blueprint of how they built Texas Tech quickly into what it is now.
So everything started changing in like the summer of 2021. It became a place where there were no rules. You could kind of do whatever you wanted to do. And so what we identified was that there was this gap period. And for a period of time, we were going to be able to pay NIL with basically no rules. And so we essentially decided to take advantage of that little window. Several boosters and donors who were interested in supporting, and we said, "Look, guys, this is our, you know, one big opportunity that we're going to have to lean in on this, and maybe the best one we ever have. We can get as much money front loaded as possible, and then we can also utilize promises of revenue share in addition to that. And so we can go out and acquire as much talent as we want." And so from there, basically went to Coach McGuire and his staff and said, "Look, guys, here's the opportunity. Here's what we think we need to do. You guys basically tell us what it's going to cost, and we're going to backstop it." And so that's what we executed on. We brought in an analytics consultant to help with that. And then we just use old fashioned coach evaluations of film. And then when the portal opened, I was just shocked, like, at every position of need, because we hit it so fast and so aggressive. We were able to communicate exactly what the players are getting and exactly when they're going to get it to all their families and to them. We were able to actually get commitments from every one of our top prospects in each position, like within just a few days of the portal opening. Now, it also meant we were going to spend a lot more money than I really anticipated on spending initially, but we're here for it. And again, thought it was a sort of a generational opportunity for us.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
So if you just listen to it topically, what you hear is they spend a lot of money. Now, if you actually look at it, The teams that spent the most amount of money in the country this year were Texas, Ohio State, LSU, Georgia, A&M, Michigan, Alabama, Florida, Clemson, and Texas Tech's at number 10. So it's not like they didn't spend a lot of money. But sometimes I get the feeling from people like they think they just dropped. I mean, he even mentioned it was more money than we thought it was going to be, and we were ready to spend a lot of money. But it's like they think they just outspent Earth, and that is not what happened. They spent a lot of money. What I took away was we had a process. We had a plan. We moved swiftly. We moved quickly. We had evaluations. As soon as guys were available, bam, we were hitting them up. We knew exactly who we wanted. We knew exactly how much we were going to be willing to pay them. And because they had a plan, because they clearly evaluated appropriately, you can get the number one guy per your evaluations, and he might not even be a top 10 player at his position because you evaluated poorly. What I took away was, first of all, Rule said we have money. He has said that. All right. So we may not have the most money on Earth, but Texas Tech didn't spend the most money on Earth. We have a lot. They spent a lot. Okay. I'm not saying we got to be Texas Tech. What I am saying is what works. I am always looking around. How do we do this show better? How do I do this better? How do I become a better dad? How do I become a better husband? Who's doing something better than I am that I can learn from? So I look at Tech, a school that nobody thinks should be a top four team in the country, not perennially, not in that conversation, yet here they are. Probably tomorrow we're going to do our college football playoff pick 'em. I still don't know who I'm going to pick over them in Georgia. Like, I haven't seen the bracket. I don't even know if they'd match up in the national title game. But coming into it, I'm like, Tech and Georgia, those are my top two. And then Ohio State and Indiana, probably 3 and 4. Now, maybe Tech and Georgia will play before the national championship. Print some brackets tomorrow, and we'll fill them out live on air. How's that sound?
Yeah, so Tech and Georgia would meet in the title game if that's...
They would.
They're on the opposite side, yeah.
You know the only thing that makes me nervous, and it actually terrifies me, and it's the only reason I might not pick those two? The long bye. Teams with a long bye were 0-4 last year. So I'm like, I got to factor that into this. But we'll just do it live on air. Remember we did it last year? And I picked Notre Dame, Ohio State.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I got it right. I was like, holy crap, those were the two teams in the national title game. But anyways, you come back to Tech. All right, they were ready to spend money. They evaluated appropriately and effectively and efficiently, and they had a plan, and they moved swiftly, and as a result, they were getting the guys they wanted. You just watched, and maybe Matt Campbell will surpass anything James Franklin ever did at Penn State. It's going to be hard to do. Also, he may not be born on third base, but he's born on second with a gigantic lead towards third. Like, James Franklin went there when Penn State was not a desirable job. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
And he built them up into what they are now. Also, the roster next year, not great for Penn State right now. Now, we'll see what they do in the transfer portal and what freshmen emerge, and because there's always young players who emerge and surprise you. But they didn't have a plan. And right now, it does not. They got a good football coach. They got a guy who can do really good things for them, but I don't think they got an upgrade. And they destroyed their high school recruiting class and basically tanked the entire rest of their season in order to make maybe a lateral move. And maybe Matt Campbell is better. We'll see. All we can judge is what we see right now. He looks like a lateral move, which isn't disrespectful because I think highly of James Franklin, but you don't go through all that and spend all that money and pay James Franklin $50 million plus dollars to steal all your recruits to make a lateral move, is what I'm saying. They didn't have a plan. Tech had a plan. They had money. They moved swiftly. They evaluated correctly. And they got good results. To me, that's what I took from that. That's how you build a college football playoff team and a program that can compete to be in the college football playoff way more often than not. What are your thoughts on that, Jake?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an incredible job done by Texas Tech and the staff. And obviously with those resources, it can help. But as somebody kind of points off here at the text line, John in Southeast Lincoln says, I would say that Indiana did a better job evaluating talent without spending a lot of money. But these are really the examples, and that's why they are where they are, two of the top four seeds in the college football playoff. It's one thing to throw money around. It's another thing to hit at a high rate as far as evaluating. Their edge rusher, Bailey, the linebacker they got in Rodriguez, these are top players at their positions. Weren't necessarily that last year, they are now. So, yep. I mean, it's development and the ability to, be able to see that in scouting.
If you watch the pregame college football or college game day, Rodriguez was a high school. was a high school quarterback. He was a quarterback, and then he hit the crossbar, $250,000 donated to charity. If you didn't see that, Pat McAfee was going crazy on game day, appropriately so. He has spent way more days, and there was a point in time when I could say this too, so I can relate. He spent way more days as a quarterback than as a linebacker. But you bring him in, and all of a sudden, boom, you develop him, and now look at him. Deep into the Heisman conversation this year, and rightfully so. His stats, if you compare them to Manti Te'o, now you got the whole catfishing, which hadn't emerged yet, so there was a sentimental story behind Manti, which obviously propelled him, and then things come out later. But you compare his stats, because Manti was a finalist in New York. That's why I'm pointing this out. Jacobs are better, and they're noticeably better. It's not disrespectful to Manti. It's a heck of a compliment to a guy who was mostly known as a quarterback until about a year ago. The point about Indiana is phenomenal because they did it with a bunch of three stars and James Madison transfers. By the way, James Madison's still in the college football playoff despite losing those transfers. That is about evaluating insanely correctly and developing on a whole nother planet successfully. And then obviously coaching during the season, making adjustments throughout the season, in-game management. I hesitate to use Indiana because it's such an outlier. I mean, it's like, okay, I'm going to use Michael Jordan as an example for everything for you fourth grade basketball players. Like, it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the greatest example I could ever think of may not be the best example to give to everybody. And that's kind of how I look at Indiana, the ultimate outlier I've ever seen in my entire freaking life. I admire it. I would study it if I'm Matt Rhule. I just don't know that I want to use it every time because it's hard to replicate that, which is why it's never been done before to the way that it's been done the past couple of years under Kurt Cignetti. Real quick, before we go to break, and then when we come back, we're going to chat about Nebraska's next defensive line coach potentially and who it might be and things we may or may not believe about it. All right, but real quick, before we go to break, the Adam Carriker Show brought to you by our good friends at Hamilton Telecommunications, bringing you the latest in quality technology and communication services since 1901. Learn more about their residential and business services at HamiltonTel.com. Again, that's HamiltonTel.com.